My name is Donal O'Sullivan. I'm from Ireland and I'm here to get help from JD.
You're listening to Making It with John Davids.
Donal, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. You wrote in and said that you need help. Why don't you just give me 30 seconds on who you are and what you do?
Okay, sure. So I'm a chartered accountant, chartered director based in Ireland, but live on a plane. I look to invest in businesses. I do some executive search. I do some coaching and mentoring. But a lot of what I do is I advise on the buying and selling of companies, mostly SME technology and services companies that do kind of 1 to 5 million EBITDA is pretty much where my sweet spot is.
So a company is doing, let's say, $2 million in EBITDA, or that's revenue?
EBITDA, yeah.
So they're making $2 million in profit and they either want to sell themselves or maybe buy a company, and you're the one who comes in and tells them exactly how to do it.
Correct. That's exactly right.
And how long have you been doing this for?
I suppose off my own steam, probably only about 3 years or so, but I previously acquired and managed a range of niche technology and services companies in that kind of same scale for over a decade on behalf of a high net worth individual on a global basis.
And what's the problem that you're looking to solve right now?
I think for me, an awful lot of my business has been word of mouth, and which has been good, don't get me wrong. You know, I've built up a good network of potential customers over the past decade plus. But I suppose from my perspective, and this is why talking to you made an awful lot of sense to me, is I'm really keen to focus on that, you know, I suppose that outbound marketing point and really build an online community.
So I noticed you wrote build an online community in the problem that you want to solve. What makes you think that building an online community is the fix? And what does that even mean to you?
Yeah, good question. I think from my perspective, what I think I'm missing is, I suppose, a go-to place where people can actually hear trusted information that can assist them to either make themselves more, I suppose, knowledgeable on what the process is to either buy a company or to be ready to sell their business in times to come, or I suppose just general information around how to improve their businesses such that when the time does eventually come, they've already put those steps in place. And that is the kind of the information and the knowledge that I've amassed over the past decade plus. So I think creating that place online for those people would make an awful lot of sense for me and them.
Does something like that already exist? If I'm looking to buy or sell a business, a few million in revenue, can I go somewhere today to get that information?
I think that in Ireland here, there's not a huge amount of information, or there's not a huge number of online communities that exist specifically for that purpose. There might be a little bit more in the UK because England and Scotland and Wales, like that's obviously a far larger economy. But at the same time, I still feel it's relatively underserved, especially for the part of the market that I'm looking to serve.
Are you starved for clients right now? Do you have enough business today to keep you sustained and you're looking to get business maybe for the next 1, 2, 3, 5 years? Or are you looking for new business right now?
I'd say a little bit of both, but I'd say more the former. You know, like if I look at what I've got going on for the next, you know, certainly for the next half a year to 9 months, it's pretty much already, it's visible. So I suppose, yeah, like I am definitely looking to fill the order book for the next year and a half to 2 years. Yeah.
And I'd imagine you have kind of a longer sales cycle.
Correct. Yeah. Like it's funny, it depends on how ready the person is, right? So sometimes we might get a business that's obtained an approach from a company to acquire them, or there might be maybe an event that has driven a certain decision. So it could be, for example, someone who's just decided to retire from the business and just say, okay, that's it. Okay, now we're going to go to a process. In which case that can be an awful lot quicker, but usually it's the latter where you're doing quite a bit of courting, having an awful lot of coffees, and I suppose being introduced to people and having quite a long, protracted kind of conversation.
So it's very much a relationship-driven business, and that makes a lot of sense why you'd have a lot of business for the next 6, 9, 12 months, and B, having online content and building a community, as you say, actually does make sense. One of the things people get wrong, because I talk a lot about the power of community in marketing and sales, is that they think that's the first thing they should do. And the reality is, I also talk about this concept of rent versus own, rent to own marketing. And rent to own basically means you must first rent before you can own your audience. And renting means running ads on Google, running ads on Meta, running ads on TikTok, running ads on billboards. And then as you scale, actually owning that community, building them into your email list, into your SMS, into your newsletter, that sort of thing. But it sounds like you're actually at a good point now where you don't need to get a new client in the door tomorrow. You need to get a new client in the door for next year and maybe even at the earliest next quarter or a few quarters down the line. So in that case, yeah, community building actually does make sense. I was worried if you had said to me, no, I'm looking to fill my pipeline next week, then my answer would be, okay, then you need to run some Facebook ads because that's what you're going to be getting quicker results on. So in terms of building a community, have you made content before? Have you ever blogged? Have you ever done a podcast?
No, this is all new to me.
Totally new. You've never written a column. Have you written even for yourself? Like, are you someone who likes to sit down and write?
I've written small pieces. Like I did write one publication for one, an article for a publication recently. But I suppose I'm starting to write a little bit more myself, but it's definitely a little bit alien to me.
What kind of a client database do you have? How many email addresses do you have of people that you've worked with or that you might want to work with down the line?
Good question. I suppose that's hard to put a figure on, but it's in the thousands, but it's not north of 10,000, I'd say.
Well, you're talking huge numbers already. It's in the thousands, but not north of 10,000. So something like you have maybe 5,000 email addresses?
Maybe, yeah. In that region. Yeah. But again, you know, it's qualified is another question, right?
Are they people that could potentially pay you for your service?
Potentially, yeah.
So here's the reality. You've got in the B2B space or the enterprise space where you're selling high ticket. I imagine when someone works with you, they're going to pay you thousands, tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of dollars, depending on the scale of the deal for that one engagement. So the reality is you don't need a lot of volume. You need a lot of quality. So even if you were to say, hey, John, I've got 500 email addresses, that would be totally cool to start. If you're saying you got over 1,000, that's great because you can do a lot of damage. I have mailing lists with 3,000 or 4,000 people on them, but each of them spend millions of dollars a year on the service that we might sell. And so you can do a lot of damage with just that kind of scale. So here's the kind of simple 1, 2, 3 step that I would do, and then I'll get into some more sort of detailed ideas. But the first thing I would do is I would start penning a newsletter, a weekly newsletter. If you can't even do weekly, do a couple times a month, where you put together thoughts on what's happening in the market right now, deals that you've done, interesting things you've learned along the way over the last weeks, months, years, what's happening right now in the market, really high value stuff. Send that first email out to that list that you have, and the canned spam laws might be a little different where you are, so obviously check that, but send that first email out and say, hey, I'm doing an email list. I'm talking about XYZ. I thought this would be valuable to you because you're in this space, because you have this area of expertise. Here's what I'm sharing. I will only send you this newsletter. I will only subscribe you to this list if this is something that you find valuable. Go ahead and click here to subscribe. So it's just that first email you're sending out, sort of unsolicited, but it is an email where you're saying you can subscribe to this thing. And I would start penning that newsletter. And even if you have 500, 600 people that subscribe, 10% or 20% of your current list, that is a great base. And from there, I would start building that community. Because for you, it's really about serious, educational, high-value content. I wouldn't say that you should start making TikToks or doing Instagram stuff like that. That's not what your audience is about. They want rich 500-word pieces that can actually teach them something. Does that sound good so far?
Yeah, I think you're spot on there. Yeah.
So the idea here is that if you're in a B2B space, if you're teaching something that is high value to the end user, high value in the sense of if you know this now, then 2 years from now, when you go to sell your business, having known this information 2 years ago, you can make an extra $3 million because this is information that you should have known. There's so much stuff like that in M&A and setting up your corporation and your share structure, et cetera. So the knowledge you have is actually incredibly valuable. And I'd start putting it out via email. In terms of just tactics, because I know I give this information and you might say, okay, cool, but like, how do I actually do that? Do you have like a partner? Do you have a web developer? Do you have someone that you work with? Or is this really like all you?
I do have a web developer that I work with and who, yeah, I certainly could work with on making the required changes to our website to actually incorporate that content. In terms of creating the content, I'd say it would be me and ChatGPT.
ChatGPT, absolutely. Well, ChatGPT, but I wouldn't rely too heavily on it in terms of the output. I would actually make sure that you have some personality so that people know that they're not talking to a robot. Everyone loves ChatGPT, of course.
I found it a really good place to start, you know, and then you then tweak it to incorporate your own learnings and your own, you know, as you say, your own personality.
So in terms of setting this up, I would actually go super bare bones. A lot of people think, oh, I've got to make a bunch of changes to my website or I've got to set up fancy software. I would go really bare bones. There's a whole bunch of email software. I could send you some names right after this of two or three pieces of software I'd recommend. The cheapest stuff, that's the stuff I like the best because it does the same thing as the expensive stuff. And I would put a simple email capture on your website, but you need to get into the habit, and maybe you could do this even before you start collecting emails, is you can just pen the first three or four newsletters that are going to go out so that you have them all ready to go. You got them programmed in and it becomes something where you're already 4 weeks ahead. But this is the sort of thing, honestly, Donal, where if you do this, it's going to snowball, I think, pretty quickly because you'll start to hear back from your audience before very long at all. You'll start to have people emailing you back, asking you questions. It might actually start to feel like a bit of an extra job on the side because now you're doing a bunch of work for free. But what you're really doing is adding value so that when people need to pay you, they're coming right back to you.
Yeah, makes complete sense. I completely agree with that. And yeah, I do get the whole concept of being ahead. So writing a few things so that you're ready to go once you've got everything set up to go. So yeah, that's good advice. Thank you.
Have you thought of anything like in terms of where you see this business going in 3, 5, 10 years? What do you want to be doing?
So I suppose, to be frank with you, I don't want to be changing the customer base. I don't have any ego in that context. I don't need to be doing billion-dollar deals or anything like that. You know, for me, it's I know what I can do and I know what I can't do as well. And I think that's pretty important. So I can add most value to SMEs, especially niche technology and services companies. And the more niche, the more complex, the better. And from my perspective, I've been in that game for over 10, 15 years now. And it's what I love doing. So I don't need to change that. So in terms of, yeah, like would I like to be doing more transactions? Certainly. Would I like to be adding more value? Certainly. But in terms of the actual customer base, that's not going to change and I'm going to just stay true to that.
Quick break so I can tell you about DemandScope. DemandScope is a performance marketing agency that helps you acquire new customers, keep them hooked, and scale profitably. Google ads, Instagram ads, TikTok ads, landing pages, email, and more. There are so many ways to get customers today, but if you're not doing it right, you'll end up blowing a whole bunch of money. And that's why I launched DemandScope. We're here to make sure you're doing it right. Get more customers today and scale effectively. Learn more at demandscope.co. That's demandscope.co. Are you looking to bring on a team to do more of this work for you as you scale? Or are you really wanting to remain a one-man show in the operation?
No, I definitely want to have a small team around me. And look, to be frank with you, I think we'll be starting that this year, which is good. But I can't imagine our team will be, you know, quite a large team. Like in the past, I've had, you know, a team of 25 M&A professionals on a global basis all working with me. And we were able to handle over 100 transactions at any one time. So, you know, and I did genuinely do mean that, you know. So my point is, we're very good, we're very sharp, we're very focused, we work bloody hard when we're working on things. So we can cover an awful lot of ground with a relatively tight kind of ship of team.
Yeah, this is the kind of business, though, I could see you scaling it and doing less of the hands-on work. I mean, you look at a law firm and the top lawyers are barely doing any legal work. They're shaking hands and going to baseball games or cricket games or whatever kind of games you guys play there. And so that's where I could see this going. But if you want to keep doing it yourself, then it could obviously stay a boutique where you're, you know, spending your 40 hours a week or your 20 hours a week actually doing the work.
Yeah. And I suppose that's TBC. You know, I look, to be frank with you, like this is only one of my interests, right? So, you know, as I said at the start, I've a couple of different irons in the fire. And so eventually I could, the whole point is really replacing me, to be frank. That's probably not in the next 3 to 5 years, admittedly, which is fine. But I think replacing me and to allow myself to do other things, but all the while remaining close, very close to the person who I get to replace me in this business, makes a hell of a lot of sense.
Why did you actually start this business? Before the mics heated up, you were talking about you have your hands in a whole bunch of pots. What is it about this business? Is this kind of your day job and everything else is the stuff you actually want to be doing and you're doing this to actually bring in the cash?
I suppose, to be frank with you, I love transactions, right? I get a real buzz out of it. There's such a real adrenaline rush when you get either a term sheet in from a buyer or, you know, certainly when you get a deal done over the line, even a contract with a client initially to say, yeah, I want you to represent me. Like there's a bit of a buzz there. And so there's definitely a passion for it to genuinely have. But I suppose from my perspective, like that also feeds into, I suppose I have multiple different passions and I'm just a very passionate person with an awful lot of drive and ambition and experience in a range of different industries. And so I suppose I'm using all the knowledge and the expertise that I've gained over the years to assist people who I know could really do with my expertise and help. And so, but over time, I suppose, as I say, as I train a team up, as I create a team, and as I find someone who can really replicate me in whatever it is that I do, I'll be able to move and I'll be able to apply my passions in other areas as well. Yeah, like I've always loved variety as well. That's the key for me. You know, I'd be lying if I said that just one thing only suits me down to the ground.
So it's a double-edged sword. And I have a lot of friends who very much resemble what you're describing of I've got a lot of talents and I'm doing a lot of things and I enjoy all of it. And then I ask them what their 10-year goal is. And they say, well, in 10 years, I want to have a $100 million company doing this one thing. And I say, well, how is what you're doing today going to get you to that end goal? If your end goal is to keep doing a bunch of things in 10 years, cool, you're on the right path. Where do you want to be in 10 years?
Okay, well, I can actually give you a better picture if that's okay. Me in 30 years, because I think in decades, I actually want to have, and I know you're going to be like, sorry, what? But I actually want to have 20 businesses that each are doing about 10 million of revenues and about 2.5 million of EBITDA. And, you know, I want to be a controlling kind of shareholder in those businesses, I suppose.
You want to have a mini Berkshire.
Correct. Exactly. Yes. And they're going to be a range of niche technology and services companies and, you know, one of which is going to be this corporate finance advisory business. And the reason for that is because this is the core of what we're going to start out and stay close to, because it keeps us close to the capital, also keeps us close to, I suppose, what's going on in the market and understanding trends from an M&A perspective, which is so crucial for every business to know.
So the holdco model, and just for the listeners, the idea of building a holding company and you've got businesses that are cash flow and it's a buy and hold long-term type business. And you see people doing this with boring businesses, with lawn care and with, you know, HVAC, or you see it happening with web businesses like Tiny's doing out in Vancouver. And of course, the granddaddy of all this is Warren Buffett with Berkshire Hathaway, $500 or $600 billion. It's the exact same model. Do you look to someone right now to say, like, I want to be that? Is it Warren Buffett or is it somebody else?
Well, it's certainly not Warren Buffett. The reason why is because I have some experience, not of dealing with him, but of dealing with a mini Warren Buffett whose business is generating a couple of billion in revenues. And I saw what that person had to go through to attain that. And I just don't want that level. That's why I, as I
What's
said...
What's that like? I'm curious.
It's fraught with interest and intrigue, but also you just never know what's around the next corner. And like this person lived on a plane. I lived on a plane for a decade, in fairness. I was on a plane every second day, pretty much, traveling around the world. And I loved that for a period of time, but I just, you know, with a young family now, and it's not me, right? So this person had bodyguards and a range of different things, right? So again, I'm maxing out and I'm capping my top line, my upside, because I can see a situation where beyond that, it just becomes far too unruly and not as enjoyable.
Let's go back for a second. I want to ask you a bunch of questions about your 30-year plan, but let's go back for a second to why we set up this podcast in the first place, which is about building your community. And it actually is starting to crystallize a little more. The community that you're building is also around you as a person, as an individual, because if you want to have that, let's not say Warren Buffett, but let's just say the holdco with 30 or 20 businesses that are cash flowing, a very, very nice way to set up that kind of business is to build a community, which takes a long time, that then attracts the deal flow to come to you. So the kind of stuff that you want to talk about to set yourself up as the expert of the buyer and seller of businesses, and oh, on one side, hey, I can actually help you buy and sell your business, even if it's not to me. And on the other side, and this might come 5 years down the line, hey, by the way, I'm not just a helper of buying and selling businesses, but I can actually be the buyer of your business too. And so it all kind of coalesces. And I'm sure everything I'm saying, you've thought about all this, right?
I'm not going to say I've thought of everything, but yeah, like, look, even right now, sometimes for our fee for our fee structures, we do roll into equity. So we do already own small percentages of some of the businesses that we've already worked with, if that makes sense. And that's just the start of it. But yeah.
Of course. And so starting to document that, and I'm going to use the term documenting in particular, because I said earlier, you know, teaching, yes, you could teach, but you could essentially do three things when you're making content. You could teach, you could document, or you can report. Reporting is when you talk about what other people are doing. Teaching is teaching, and documenting is, hey, here's what I'm doing. The reason I like documenting is because it sets you up both to tell your own story, get people know about you, what you're doing. This is what Buffett did in every single shareholder letter for the last 4 decades. And it's also about teaching at the same time, because you're learning and teaching at the same time. And so that makes a lot of sense as a form of content. And I would get into the habit of doing it, whether it's writing or sitting on camera or sitting on a microphone. I would get into the habit of doing it, because 30 years down the line, you're going to want to go back and revisit how you got there anyhow. So it's actually kind of a selfish exercise, but it's also a community building one.
I love that idea. And it's not something that I had thought about. So fair play to you.
Now, where do you see, what's the breaking point here? Do you want to keep this sort of M&A service business going on for essentially indefinitely? Or is there a certain point where you say, I want to take myself out of that entirely? I don't want to be in that business anymore.
No, indefinitely. And the reason why is, as I mentioned, is because staying close to the capital, staying close to the potential clients and or potential M&A targets for our own business makes so much more sense than not being close to them. So, and also keeping our mind sharp, you know, making sure our mental arithmetic stays sharp, our understanding of legal financial modeling, for example, stays sharp. You know, there's an awful lot, like this is just a constant training for us that that's so important for us to stay on top of.
And it becomes a top of funnel, because you have that constant incoming of people that maybe want to work with you on the M&A side, and you can cherry pick the best pieces. Now, I will say this, and I'm fast forwarding down the line, you're going to run into a problem where if you have an M&A business and also a holding company, everything that you put out to market for M&A, the first question you're going to get is, well, why aren't you buying this, Donnell? Why should I buy this? You're not buying it. What are you going to do then?
Well, look, we're going to have extremely strict criteria and characteristics of businesses that we will be able to invest in. And so those businesses that don't fit within that characteristics or criteria will be those that we will not be able to invest in.
Good answer. You've rehearsed it. I like it.
Well, I've just had over a decade of that, because we had very strict criteria and characteristics previously. So it makes just sense for me.
Let me ask you one last question, and then I'm happy to take any more on your side. So in 20, 30 years, we're having a conversation. Give me a couple businesses that you would want to own at that point.
Okay. Funeral directors, pest control, climate change focused. So I'm thinking, you know, businesses that are affected by weather changes, information services businesses that are incredibly niche, certification businesses, accreditation businesses, certainly again within niches. Like, I also
love health. You give me goosebumps here. These are fantastic businesses. Let's go to the first one. Did you say funeral directories?
Funeral directors. So funeral homes.
Is that like a funeral home business, or what does that mean?
Funeral home businesses. Yes.
So one of the biggest small businesses in my town, there's actually two of them, and they are funeral homes and individual location funeral homes, absolutely clean up. These guys make $200,000 a day. It's crazy, the kind of money that's in the funeral business.
It's insane. I agree with you. And in Ireland here, there are a number of funeral homes, right? But there's a significant consolidation potential, right? And look, from my perspective, I'm starting small and it'll take time. My family, actually, my wife's family were funeral directors. So I do have a bit of inside knowledge there. But look, death is certain, right? So that's what I like.
Death is certain. And unfortunately, when the funeral comes up, most people, at least you don't plan ahead, you drop whatever the money is for the funeral, which is a lot of the time can be like a small wedding, frankly. And you write that check in 20 minutes because you want to get the hell out of there. It's unfortunate, but it's a real business. So let's wrap up on a happier note. Anything else I can tell you about what we've talked about today?
I think, no, listen, you've provided me with an awful lot of really, really good nuggets here, John. So I really appreciate it. I suppose the main question for me would be looking down the line, like, and saying, imagine I do all the things that you're requiring, or you're suggesting I do in a number of years' time. Can you see me needing to change that approach? Or do I just keep on doing the same thing? Or do I need to make a drastic change to what it is that I'm doing?
When you start an email list and you start sending out an email every week, ideally, if it has to be every other week, that's fine too. But you start sending out with that frequency, you will start hearing back from your audience, from your community as you go through that process. And you will start to learn what they want, what they expect. And so you might say, you know what? These people really want to hear from me, from my voice. And so I'm going to start a podcast and drop a podcast every other week. Or, you know, they actually want to see me in person. I'm going to do an event once a year, a la the Warren Buffett, Berkshire Hathaway, Financial Palooza they do once a year. So you will start to figure out what the audience wants. In the ideal world, if you said to me, hey, John, I've got a content team of four people, cool. Start making short form videos, start doing long form, start doing, you know, X, all this kind of stuff. But at the very basic level, if you're an enterprise B2B type seller, you want to be doing a newsletter because people are checking their email 55 times a day and they are consuming content via email. And if it's high value, and this is the important thing because there also is such a thing as newsletter fatigue. People don't want to read 50 newsletters a day. But if what you're sending them is high value, and when I say high value, I mean like they can make money from the information that you're sending, then I think that there's a real opportunity there. And I think that's going to last you years. I mean, again, look at Buffett. What's his main form of content? And let's put aside the mainstream media. His main form of content is a written newsletter that he sends out once a year and an event that he does once a year. And he's been doing that for 50 years and it hasn't stopped working. It's only gotten better. So I think you can go a long way with that.
I love that. Yeah. Listen, thanks so much. You've really distilled that down for me because it's funny. I'd have known, obviously, and read a lot of his newsletters and been to the event, but I'd never thought of it as actually a marketing tool, but it's so right. That's what it is.
That's all it is. And I still read them today. Fantastic. Donal, thanks so much.
No, I really appreciate it, John. Thanks for your time.
Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, leave a rating or a review on Apple or Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. It helps other people find the show and it lets us know that we're doing something right. We'll talk to you guys next time.